Executive, grand title. First of the means, I support our field sales force in terms of technical backup. And I also manage the new product development activities within our business. So basically, I'm here today to talk about the Regain business, which is essentially a rigid plastics recycler. And within that, I want to bring into the aspect of packaging waste as an important feedstock. And of course, within that, food packaging waste, which is has to be regarded as a very important and valuable feedstock in our business and for our product offering. So just as a general overview of what I'm going to cover, give a bit of background on the business, what we actually do, investments and future plans for the business, and then moving on to the technical challenges to recycling, bringing into that part also the challenges specifically from packaging waste, and look at technical and physical performances, technical solutions to the challenges, and then I'm going to go through some specific case studies showing some successful product launches that our recycled materials have been successful in the market with. So a brief background. As you may or may not know, Regain Polymers began as a subsidiary of Limpac nearly, 21 years ago, 92, known as Limpac Plastics Recycling. The actual subsidiary itself was very successful in the early stages and for quite a long time grew rapidly. In the later stages, in the late 2000s, before 2010, however, it was getting slightly sidelined by the Limpac business. And there were certain investment challenges, so the business was beginning to stagnate somewhat. And for whatever reason that actually happened, Limpac decided to concentrate on their core activities of food packaging, and we were sold in January 2011 to a private equity group called Chamonix. But there, in the relatively short time we've been with them, it's been excellent for the business. They've had a strategy for growth, not asset stripping. There's been a lot of inward investment, and our capacity has increased in terms of our product offering from 30,000 tonnes a year to 45,000 tonnes a year, and the turnover is increasing quite significantly year upon year. The figure from 2011 was 25 million, and last year's figures were 28 million. So what do we do? So basically, just running through the recycling process that we are actually involved with, the key to any recycling business is procurement of feedstocks. Because unlike the prime polymer business, feedstocks are finite. We do operate a lean manufacturing system, but when feedstocks become available, we must bring them in, because it's quite a unique way that the recycling business operates. So materials are brought into site, usually on truckloads, and are stored on site in effectively a scrapyard, and so ready to use. Just at this stage, we only deal with rigid plastics, not film or sheet. And really, in terms of the plastics that we do utilise, it's really a mix of polyolefins, 45% polypropylene, 45% polyethylene, and about 10% polystyrene. We do not recycle PET. In fact, PET is a contaminant to us. The first key stage, when the materials are brought in, is the waste plastic. So we're talking about, in this particular case, say crates or compacted bales of post-consumer bottles, plastic bottles. The waste is chopped and granulated in a shredder system. And this material, it goes through quite a complex process of not just washing, but it's actually density separated using a float sink technology and a large tank of water, effectively, with surfactants. This material is then dried and it forms pretty consistent intermediate bulk products, which is then utilised in our key next stage of blending and extrusion. I think this is quite a unique offering for us. It's being able to blend all the different types of materials together to create a product that's suitable for a customer-driven specification. The materials are blended in something called a fountain blender. This is effectively a silo with a central screw that brings the different types of materials up the middle, and it flows in that sort of pattern, and it's been proven to be a very good means of mixing different materials of different bulk densities and different sizes, and it does work really, really well. The key to this stage is producing a uniform product, so it needs to be really well mixed together. And the different feedstocks would, you know, come in different forms and different bulk densities, from post-industrial offcuts to post-consumer flake. So that is an absolute key stage for us. Moving on from there, I suppose this is the value-adding stage that we really do get involved with, is the extrusion itself. So the blended material is melt-extruded through a heated barrel with a single screw or twin screw. So effectively the plastic is melted into a molten stream, and at about this point along the barrel, it's vented. It's what we call degassing. So any inks or moisture at the temperatures that we run at are volatilized and taken out of the melt. It's a very good way of removing this type of what we call a contaminant at this stage. So printed inks are an issue for us. And then the other key stage in this, just before we actually pelletize, is melt filtration, where the polymer stream passes through a fine mesh. This removes any physical contaminants or unmelted, effectively, non-molten polymers. So for instance, if we're processing polyolefins, things like PET could be taken out. And then the final stages involve the extrudate being pelletized by a rotating blade, and that material is effectively chopped into small pellets at the die head. Moving on from that, the finished product is in the form of small pelletized compound, and these are packaged according to a customer requirement. It can be dispatched in terms of bulk in tankers, large 1-ton bags, octoboxes, or palletized sacks, depending upon the customer driven specification. Just some examples of end use applications of our recycled plastic. So look at the first one. This is a food caddy for disposal of kitchen waste, etc. And this is an injection moulded article from 100% polypropylene. Another big market for us is the horticultural market, and this is a composter, which is actually blow moulded high density polyethylene product, again from 100% recycled material. Moving on to this one, this is another big part, is the Sybil's part, drainage pipe. This is actually a twin wall pipe, and this is extruded from 100% high density polyethylene. Wheelie bins, these are injection moulded from high density polyethylene. This is a bit of a unique one, clothes pegs. Coloured clothes pegs made from 100% homopolymer, polypropylene. It's quite marketed as quite a unique recycled product as well. It's quite a good marketing tool for ourselves as well as the customer. And one here, this is actually a wheel arch liner for a vehicle. So it's an automotive product. We do supply into blue chip companies at the high end automotive sector, which for a recycler is quite a challenge, but we've been doing that for some years now.
Just a silly question.
Yeah.
Obviously a lot of those are dark green. Is that just de facto they happen to be made dark green, or is that a colour
yellow
that you
pegs
end up with? We've got yellow pegs, I appreciate that.
It's a bit like the Henry Fordism. You can have any colour you want, as long as it's black. It's not quite as bad as that, but
right,
we do struggle with really bright colours. Because in the general mix of things, you cannot go lighter, you can only go darker.
Yeah.
So we would struggle. I mean, this is quite a unique offering in terms of that colour pen, but that's a smaller volume. But typically, it would be a dark green, a dark brown, black. A dark grey, but we're getting more and more feedstocks where we're able to produce slightly lighter colours, but not the really bright and vivid colours.
Okay.
That's just.
I didn't know it was choice of photos
of
or reality. It's reality.
No,
so
it's well observed.
Okay.
So where are Regain Polymers going? Strategic investment. We've actually acquired a second site, which is a preparation facility, a non-compounding facility down in Raynham in Essex. The reason behind this was to again, as I've stated earlier, it's all about we're only as good as our feedstocks, and we can tap into the pool in the Greater London area. Of course, it's high population density, lots of potential feedstocks for us, and that's certainly helping our growth plan. The extrusion capacity, as I've mentioned earlier, has increased to 45,000 tonnes per annum, and we purchased a new extrusion line last year at a cost of £1.2 million. And we've actually created a product development centre, because obviously looking forward, product development is key in this area, as it is in most areas. It's not looking like that anymore, by the way. That started earlier in the year. Fantastic. Yeah, really good pictures there. Yes.
Where is that?
Where is that? What's happened there? Sorry?
Where is it in Yorkshire?
This is at Castleford in West Yorkshire. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, that's not loaded up. I've got some pictures on there of the lab as it looks now.
Yeah.
It's all spanking.
Yeah.
I suppose somebody's on the. I sent it to you, Barbara. What's happened there? It's looking really good, and you know, that's disappointing. It certainly doesn't look like that anymore. But basically, it's a really good facility for us. It's only recently opened with a state of the art analytical lab. Lots of different analytical techniques like DSC, mechanical testing, and it's auto isolation plus a lab small scale extrusion line as well. It's a shame about that. So why use recycled polymer? Environmental reasons are probably the obvious one. Corporate social responsibility is obviously becoming more prominent for businesses these days. As it's already been mentioned earlier, consumer perception is everything. And recycling really does emphasise that that a business is absolutely going down that route. The other thing is, compared to prime materials, there's only 30% of the carbon emissions from an equivalent amount of recycled versus prime. Commercial advantages being, there is an obvious cost benefit. We offer prime alternatives with far more than cost neutral, with an obvious financial benefit. And also, what's not on there is diversion from landfill, because these days, maybe rightly so, landfill taxes are increasing significantly and rapidly, and they're only going to get worse. So that's the other advantage on cost. And then the legislative drivers, government targets. There's a target for domestic waste to be increased by 5% year upon year over 5 years to a target of 47% in 2017. So specifically to talk about packaging waste, which is obviously more relevant to this group, there's no doubt in it that utilising commingled plastics from the domestic waste stream is a real challenge for the recycler. It really is. But on the other hand, it's absolutely vital for sustaining our business going forward in terms of the availability of a really good quality of feedstock. We do utilise HDP and PP, not PET, in terms of what we call post-consumer recycling, which is a term from the domestic waste stream, effectively. So, in terms of just going through how that works, the waste plastic is collected via curbside collections from the consumer, from the domestic household, via council collections. It's then sorted and separated at a material reclamation facility, a MRF. At that point, we will attain a bale of compressed plastic articles that have been sorted to about 85% purity in terms of a single polymer type, say HD, well, in terms of polyethylene or polypropylene. As you can imagine, 85% is still not brilliant, but you know, that's down to the, you know, the sorting methods that are currently available in terms of near infrared sorting. It is fast, it's not always perfectly accurate. Hand sorting is often utilised, but it's very expensive, unless you're in China, of course. And black materials are a real problem, because near infrared and not really detect the differentials there. So basically, we've traditionally, in terms of food packaging then, for HDPE, that is typically in the form of plastic milk bottles. It's been a really good feedstock for our business for a number of years now. But what we're finding more and more is the polypropylene stream. is really useful for us, and that's from things like yellow fat containers such as margarine and butter tubs and yogurt pots. And it's an excellent stream, it's very consistent, and the coloration is nice and light as well. So this does help us to offer some lighter colour products that are not dark green or black. So yes, in terms of where we're going, packaging and food packaging waste is a very, very useful and important feedstock for our business. And just to mention there as well, in terms of single, obviously in terms of a challenge for the recycling industry, you know, we would always, we would like to see probably more emphasis on design for end-of-life recycling from packaging. I know we've talked about this earlier, but for the recycler, mixed plastics in one article is a problem. Labels are a problem, adhesives, foil. But I know, you know, it's not easy, but, you know, a greater emphasis on this would certainly benefit the end-of-life recycling.
Can I just ask you, for example, a ketchup bottle, it's got a barrier layer of EVOH in the middle to improve shelf life. What effect does that have on your production line if that goes through?
To be honest, on some of the bulk things, like the, you know, you can imagine like a water butt, very little.
No.
We can deal with quite a high level of contamination.
Yeah.
But because we're moving into more high-end markets, where the
so
purity of polymer...
Yeah, by you.
Basically yes, and it may mean that we don't utilise the post-consumer stream for certain applications, unless the sorting or separation techniques become more sophisticated.
The main thing I've taken away from this, because this was a new space for me in the last couple of years, is those products aren't going back into the food stream. It's only in PET that you're seeing that closed loop action.
And that's a really good point. It was something that I've not highlighted at this stage, but you're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
We are closing the loop to a degree, but it's not going back into food packaging.
No. No.
Whereas in PET, you're collecting PET water bottles and it's ending up back in trays, tubs, pods, etc.
There is the possibility for it to go back to a degree into food packaging, but it's a huge investment.
Yeah.
But doesn't legislation need to change dramatically as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's not just a
technology. Yeah, that's absolutely right, for sure. So one of the main challenges is contamination. Mixed collections, as I've already talked about, automated sorting, and lack of knowledge by some of the people in the earlier chain, recycling chain as well. What sort of solutions have we got? We can use post-industrial materials instead of post-consumer. It tends to be better controlled and easily identified, but it's a finite resource, and we would not want to exclude the post-consumer fraction. Supplier audits, we do get involved and train. Well, our QC people get involved with some of our suppliers, and that's been found to be reasonably successful. We do utilise the density separation technique anyway, which is pretty good. It cleans things up from 85% to 98% purity. Melt filtration itself, which is part of the extrusion process, can be used to control, to remove certain types of contaminant. Process control and monitoring is also a key. So what are other challenges? In terms of actual physical performance, there's more and more demanding applications are required from our customers. Things like high impact strength, which is toughness of course, stiffness, more rigidity, long-term properties such as creep, which is deformation under a load over time, and stress crack resistance. Environmental stress crack resistance is becoming more and more of a requirement in blow molded articles. And the limitations at the same time from recycling are, of course, the big one for us, feedstock availability, lack of single streams, impurities, as we've talked about, physical contaminants, such as paper, wood, metal, and cross-polymer contamination. So in terms of the greater challenge moving to the higher-end applications, the more demanding applications, this sort of pictogram gives a bit of a representation of where we are. Virgin materials tend to be high cost, but good performance. Recycle, lower performance still, but cheaper. So the solution that we're looking at is to combine the two into a recycled prime blend, where we would use an over-engineered prime blended at various levels, 10% for instance, with recycling, just to give a lift to the overall mechanical properties of the offering. And this More and more of this, this approach is being utilised for our new, products coming through the new product development pipeline, and we're having a good deal of success, and we can still offer cost benefit with this approach. What other tools have we got? Impact modification by adding things like very low density polyethylenes, recycled or prime thermoplastic elastomers, and metallocene catalyzed polypropylenes. Nucleating agents to give increased levels of crystallization for improving stiffness and other properties. There's often a residual odor with some of the recycled products, which is an issue. We've done quite a lot of work with different odor absorbers, chemical odor absorbers, and odor masks, etc., over the last year. And we've found some pretty good solutions that are commercially viable. Do give a good, strong solution, and that one, quite a few customers have taken to it, but it's still a challenge, that one. Anti-scratch additives for certainly for mineral-filled polypropylenes used in cars, for car interiors, for instance, interior parts. High-performance talcs for improving mechanical properties, and fully recycled filler systems is something else that we're looking at. And on the, and I think it'd been mentioned already today, process aids. We do utilise some waxes and fatty acid systems again to improve efficiencies, dispersion and compatibility between polymers. So just to finish with, I'm going to cover four case studies specific to our, to some of our products. First one is, which we've been, you know, it's been a good success story really, has been utilising recycled content, our recycled product in jeweled paint cans. I think, as Joe had mentioned, the real barrier getting up here was it was a white paint can. But working with them, I managed to change hearts and minds with the marketing people, and they've launched this now, it's been out for some time, a can that's dark grey. Probably looks black there, but it's actually dark grey. And that utilises 25% recycled content, which is actually 100% post-consumer sourced. It still needs to be at that sort of percentage to give the absolute properties that this particular product is requiring. But they are, we are working with the customer to try and increase this to 50%. And that's looking pretty promising, and I think there's going to be a 50% recycled can launched within the next few months. But I think that's quite a big brand that we worked with, and it's certainly a good marketing case study for ourselves and our brand. Moving on, cable ducting. So this is troughs, effectively, that run at the side of the rail track, network rail. Traditionally, well, it's got to have good long-term properties, because once it's laid, it's got to certainly be 20 years plus, if not longer. Really, traditionally, the rail network have utilised concrete for this, for this application. But there were problems with installations. When they install the concrete troughs, they tend to crack. And the plastic, which is filled polypropylene, mineral-filled polypropylene, 20% talc-filled, is a lower-cost solution. The difficulty here was, again, changing the hearts and minds, because Network Rail are very entrenched in terms of the concrete business. So we've worked long and hard with the customer to get this through, but by no means is this on every stretch of track in the country. It's on, it's really still in trial stages on various stretches of track. But we're hopeful that it might be utilised in the new HS2 build along the tracks there as well. It's another interesting case study. What I should say, and not mentioned actually, is that this one does have quite a high proportion of post-consumer food packaging content as well, polypropylene screen. This one is a heating and ventilation air conditioning unit for a Nissan vehicle. This has been utilised for some time by Nissan in some of their new cars, like the Note, Qashqai, etc. So the volumes have been very, very good for us. And the fact that it's 100% recycled, it's a blow mold article made from high density polyethylene, it's odor neutralised. And we've got to have very good controls in terms of rheology, because it's a raw moulded product. It's we're on their approved supplier list now, and that's another good highlight of where we've moved to, really, in terms of what we can offer at the higher end. And the last one is, it's a water soakaway, so this is like a crate structure that's buried in the ground, and it's used to support infrastructure under car parks, etc. It's got to have good load bearing capabilities. It's a demanding application over time, good creep resistance, deformation resistance over time to a load. And it's gone through all their internal testing at the customers, which I'm not going to actually name at the moment, but and it's looking really, really promising. And that product is being launched later this year. It's actually a recycled prime blend, as I talked about earlier. It's got 10% of an over-engineered polypropylene prime in there. But it still gave the requisite properties. It's a big cost down for the customer. And in terms of the volume potential, it's quite huge. I think we're talking about potentially 10,000 tonnes per annum. So that's, again, just moving out of development stage into full commercial. It's another good selling point for our brand. And that's it, really. Thank you for listening. Thank you.